This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
There's a question where the questioner wants to know that if a company offers loans to employees and they deduct a loan amount and an additional 500 rupees is deducted, and that amount is like a reserve which is created in case a person misses out paying the loan, then money is taken from there. Is this riba? Look, this has to be looked into technically. If I have to pay you back 1,000 rupees every month, okay, for 12 months, and as a matter of safety and precaution, the company says, we are going to set aside a reserve. So instead of deducting 100 rupees every month from your salary, we will deduct 150 rupees. So I deduct 150 rupees, and this 50 rupees keeps getting set aside as a reserve. And at the end of the 12 months, if I have paid the 12 months amount, then the additional 50 rupees which was deducted every month, which totals up to 600, is returned back to me, then this is not an issue. If they say that you fail to pay for, say, 2 months, so that's like 200 rupees, so we take out 200 from that kitty and return you back the 400, that's also not an issue because it's not riba. Whatever I owed, I've paid back. However, if the company tells me that this reserve amount now stays back with us, then that becomes a case of riba. So if I understood the question correctly, and this is the more appropriate answer to it.
Wishes to know about the ruling on drop shipping. Is drop shipping halal in Islam? For the ease of the others who may not know what drop shipping is, drop shipping is a system which has gained a lot of popularity nowadays. What happens is a retailer markets products being offered by a wholesaler or a manufacturer, thereby creating a demand amongst the customers. After he receives the demand, he collects the payment. Then he goes and purchases the item from the wholesaler or manufacturer and then arranges to deliver the product. So, or what he does is he passes the lead to the wholesaler, makes the payment to the wholesaler and asks the wholesaler to deliver the goods or the commodities to the concerned person. In this transaction, the one who is doing this drop shipping benefits from marketing and earns the difference in price. So he may charge, for example, $100 from you, but the price of the good that he will procure from the wholesaler will be at $95, and that $5 becomes his profit. What is the ruling on this? Is this allowed? Are these transactions allowed? As we remember, we said the general ruling is you're not allowed to sell something that you don't own. These are the basic law. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the hadith is in Sunan Tirmidhi, do not sell what you do not own. So, is there any exception to this? Well, there is an exception in a form of a transaction called the salam transaction or a forward sale. This is a sale whereby a seller undertakes to supply certain specific goods to the buyer at a future date in exchange of an advance price fully paid on the spot. So basically, the option over here is something which is technical. If drop shopping has to be Islamically allowed, it will have to follow the salam mechanism of transaction, where the buyer will pay an agreed amount to the seller for an item to be delivered on a set date and place, and then the seller's job will be to go and procure it from the wholesaler or the manufacturer and make sure that the product reaches the buyer as per the specification mentioned. What is important here is it has to follow the salam model of transaction. Okay, so there are a lot of conditions attached to it. Now, the other alternative is, if you are living in a country where all of these things may appear a little complicated, the simple thing is, if you are in the business of drop shipping, what you could probably do is get a certificate or a license from a manufacturer or a wholesaler to be an authorized distributor or an authorized commissioned agent who is acting on behalf of a wholesaler or a manufacturer. If you do that, then there isn't any problem, because even if you don't own it, you have been authorized by the wholesaler or manufacturer to get them the leads, and in the games that they pay you your commission. However, the kind of dropshipping that exists in the market today, in most of the cases, there is no contract between the wholesaler and the seller, the retailer. The retailer just markets it on his website. If you wish to buy any of the product, you place an order. As soon as you place an order, his job now is to contact the wholesaler and ask him to send across the good to you. So this becomes problematic. If there is no specific agreement where he's not entitled to act on behalf of the wholesaler, then he's behaving as though he owns the good, which is not correct, which is a misleading claim that he is making. And Allah knows best. Another question. Without me realizing, my employer puts a percentage of my salary in a portfolio, some of which are bonds. What am I to do in this situation? Look, if your employer puts your salary in any instrument out of compulsion, forced, it is not voluntarily, it's not something that you have chosen for yourself, and this is the policy, the company doesn't give you an option. In a situation like this, whatever money you make from there, that entire money is yours, you can freely use it. However, if you have an option to decide what to do with that money, then you should instruct your employer not to invest in those schemes, and Allah knows best. Student at IOU wants to know about fiat money whose intrinsic value is nothing according to Sharia. So, actually according to anyone, it's got no value. So, what we're doing in the economy, is it wrong? What is their view according to Sharia? Look, what she means by fiat money is the paper currency that you have with you right now. If you take it out from your pocket, if you tear it, it's khalas, it's over. You don't get anything back, right? If you have gold with you, and if you go to the jeweler and you tell him that, listen, I've got 10 grams of gold, give me 2 5 grams of gold, or break it into two pieces and give me 5 grams, they both still have values, right? So there is an intrinsic value. The value of gold is in gold. That's what she means to say. But the value of a fiat currency is not in the fiat currency. If I write a note and I say this is 50,000 rupees, does that mean that that paper has a value of 50,000? No, it does not mean the paper has a value of 50,000. The paper being printed in bulk may probably cost you 5 paisa, 2 paisa, 1 paisa, that's it. But because of the legal tender money, that's why it's called legal tender money, because it has been legalized and the government has printed it and given it an official sanction, it becomes of its value, whatever value it is representing. So the questioner wants to know, how fair is it to use these paper currencies which have got no value as money? I mean, is it Sharia compliant? The answer is, historically, and if you see the 6 ribawi commodities that the Prophet ﷺ also mentioned, they had value in them. Like salt has value. Salt in itself has value. Gold in itself has value. Silver in itself has value. Right? So these were the ribawi commodities, and if you see traditionally at different points of time in human history, all of these ribawi commodities and even more other commodities as well have been used as legal tender money. So in the past, people would use that which had actual value as real money. Okay? Then what happened was the Bretton Woods Agreement took place. Well, before the Bretton Woods Agreement, what happened is the goldsmith, what they started doing. Look at the history of money. The goldsmith, what they started doing was people came to them and they said, listen, I have these gold reserves with me. I'm going to give it to you. They would leave it as storage. And when they would leave it as storage with the jeweler would issue a certificate saying, Aisha has 10 grams of gold with us. Okay? And on the due date, whenever Aisha would come to the jeweler and say, listen, this is my certificate, give me back my gold. So the gold would be returned. Now what happened was, more and more people started keeping their money with the jeweler for whatever reasons. And they started utilizing these certificates in the market. So if Aisha had to pay something to Madiha, let's suppose she had to pay 10 grams of gold to Madiha, she wouldn't go to the jeweler and say, please give me my 10 grams of gold. I need to pay to my friend. Rather, she would just hand over that certificate to Madiha.
So the goldsmiths realized that the people are not coming back to take back their gold. And rather, the ones who come back are different from the ones whom they are being issued to. So they realized that the gold is now, the certificates are now being traded in the market. It is being exchanged. And it's becoming convenient for the people. Instead of carrying gold with me everywhere, I can simply carry certificates. It's ease of doing business. So what the jewelers did, the goldsmith did was, you know, the Jewish goldsmith, they were the ones who were controlling the market. They decided that, listen, we have a chance here to make more money for ourselves. What they started doing was, they now started issuing fake certificates, which were not backed by gold, into the market. Because they knew that not everyone is going to come back and take the actual gold. The certificate itself was now becoming worth the gold. So by issuing fake certificates, they started creating fake money in the market, right? There's no actual money in the market, but they have just issued certain certificates and created money in the market. So this is how they were creating more and more fake currencies in the market. So when you look into this history, and then when you compare it with the monetary system that we have today, it's the same thing. The Bretton Woods Agreement was what? When the Bretton Woods Agreement happened, then in US, for example, everyone was asked to hand over their gold deposits to the government. And against that, dollars were issued to them. And it was mentioned in the dollar, "In God we trust." Why was that statement written? It was written because what you were telling the people is, listen, we trust in God, you can trust in us, we won't cheat you. Each of the dollars that we are issuing you is backed by gold. That is what they were mentioning. So they kept on doing the transaction in this manner. And eventually what happened was, US withdrew from the Bretton Woods Agreement. Unilaterally, it came out of the Bretton Woods Agreement, and they took away all the gold reserves from the people, and now they started issuing fake currencies in the market. Okay? So this is what has happened. It's a big theft. It's a grand theft which has taken place with the wealth of the people. That you've taken away the actual wealth of the people and you have replaced it with fake currencies. Now what happens in the market? Now what happens is that whenever they are short of money, they can simply print money without any backing. So when the Middle Eastern countries are trading their oil with dollars, what is happening? The oil is real wealth. It's natural resources. But you're selling your natural resource against printed currencies, the value of which can go away overnight. Not with real money. This is why some of the countries had raised concerns, okay? And they wanted to trade with gold, their oil with gold. And well, eventually we know what happened to those countries and their leaders. We won't get into the politics here. So is it halal? Is it Sharia compliant? No, it isn't. But because we don't have an alternative now, and the entire economy is controlled by this legal tender money, the Sharia scholars have given an approval to it. But there should always be a continuous focus of all our economists to revive the original form of currencies, the real wealth, which will make actual people wealthy. Today, these paper currencies can make anyone wealthy because then anyone can go and take loan from the company, and they can have so much of money showing against their name where actually they don't have that real wealth with them. What if the Sharia board lies about the investment being halal? The burden of responsibility is on whom? The ulama or the investors? First and foremost, lying is a serious allegation. So firstly, we make it clear that sometimes the ulama may make an ijtihad, an interpretation, may strive to come to a ruling, and that ruling may be correct, may be wrong. If it is correct, he gets two rewards. The reward for the ijtihad and the reward for getting the ruling right. If he gets it wrong, he still gets the reward for the ijtihad. So he still gets one reward. We make it clear this is not lying. However, the questioner says, what if it is a lie, which means that the ulama knows this is haram, but because of the pressure, etc., he makes it halal. And we know of schemes like this. In a situation like this, naturally, the burden of responsibility is lying with the ulama for misleading the investors, and the entire sin of the investors would perhaps be something which the ulama may need to account for. Allah knows best. However, an important point here is, if there's another group which is pointing out to you that this is haram, you must try to listen to their reasoning. You must listen to their argument. Why is it that the other group calls it haram? Do you think this is making sense? If somebody says that this is blatant lie that they are doing, their question, you should go up and ask your Sharia scholars. You can ask them, why is it that there are differences in opinion happening? Why is it that the other group says that you are approving a haram scheme? And that is the duty and responsibility of every investor. Okay? So that is my personal opinion, and Allah knows best.